Hello, welcome to another episode of Ricky Gervais's Deadly Serious with me, Ricky Gervais, Diane Morgan.
Hello.
And guess who's here? Little Robin Ince.
Hello.
Oh, looking all sexy.
Yep.
Dirty
really?
Boy.
Yeah, I've rolled my sleeves up and everything.
Yeah.
Like they do in the films.
Oh, look at it.
When they build something.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. You are... Oh, he's like a little furry egg. And here's Ed. Is that a little furry egg? I absolutely love Robin Ince. I don't know why. It does something to me. It always has. I try and talk... I have conversations with him about fucking time, space, the Kierkegaard... The morality.
But never for that long. It's always this bigger. Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I find fascinating with Einsteinian ideas of the Block universe is, Robin! Oh, God, that came out again. So it never becomes overly intellectual.
No.
I mean, Kierkegaard, wasn't it Kierkegaard who said, oh, look, a little hairy, fluffy egg!
Yeah.
And also something about, you know, that we only understand life backwards.
It's his little face. I've known that little face when it was in proportion and everything, and he had hair. And then I
first... still works approximately proportionally. I mean, as much as faces do. In just case people think, oh, has he got neurofibromatosis since he was last on?
I like it when he fights back, when he wriggles. Right,
I know, that's what you know that bit where you wonder, Diane, what people at home listening to this or travelling, the actual image they had, because it is just three of us sitting around a desk with microphones, but the wriggling element, the fluffy head that's not kind of proportional.
It's like you're a pet.
It is.
Like
honestly, though,
when I see a little doggy or a little cat, I go, squeeze it. It's that thing you've got for a grown man. It's weird.
But I saw him, I first saw him when I came into the room when he was there. I'm like, he's put jeans on and everything. Oh, yeah, rock and roll, baby. And he's got, oh, God, and his little fingers. Look at his little fucking fingers.
And now all the people at home going, is it fucking, because, you know, 97% of people are wearing jeans. And going, oh, hang on, Ricky said don't wear jeans.
So now festival bangles.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I haven't got that off yet, yeah. I was doing a festival the other day.
Oh, my God. And I was trying to make this more professional, but I can't, not with Robin here. So
anyway, Elton John, and shouldn't we all follow the Yellow Brick Road? Let's have a little bit listen to that. There we are. Good old Elton. And,
I'm going to fucking die.
Great fan of Bernie Taupin as well. What a wonderful lyricist. Anyway, Robin.
This is right. Okay. Oh,
this is avant-garde, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Right. Okay. I've just got to not look at Robin.
This kind of feels like the cabaret scene in Berlin in the early 1930s, just before everything went to shit. You're all there as some kind of strange MC.
Right. So, this new year of Deadly Serious, I sort of started off trying to inject it with a little bit of professionalism again, and I even printed out the Proust questionnaire, but that went to shit. But I think it's one person it'll work on. It's you, because they're sort of highfalutin, cerebral, sort of arty questions, and you've got a funny little brain, haven't you?
Yeah, funny little brain and a misshapen, fluffy little head. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, it's all going on there.
Right.
Which ones are you going to do on it?
I don't know. What's your idea of perfect? That'll be this.
Well, not that. Not that.
Oh my God. This is the worst. This is the worst.
I'm joined here by George Clooney. George, can I just ask you? I just put out your happiness. And,
right. I know.
Fucking hell. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the last ever Deadly Serious.
I'm sweating.
He's had too many falafel before, and he's got all chickpeas around his beard.
Oh,
it's a disaster.
Fucking hell.
What is my idea of... Give me the final part of that, then. So what is my idea of...
Honestly, if you said, oh, he died, why? He was with Robin. Jane would... she'd go, oh, yeah, he got overexcited, did he, and choked to death. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right, was he trying to hug him? No, he was just looking at him.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. She goes, oh, you got Robin today. I go, yeah. She goes, be nice. She always says, be
very
grown up.
Very compassionate woman.
Yeah, she says, he's like, remember, he's a father now and all that, sort of treat him with respect. I go, yeah, all right. Oh, then I see him and I go, oh
so
my back
bizarre,
hurts.
Isn't it?
Right,
so anyway, let's try that question again.
Okay, right.
Fucking hell. I can't believe this is just basically, right from the start, the whole 90 minutes of this is merely an outtake, isn't it? From the point of recording onwards.
Honestly.
Who's Dom DeLuise? Who's Burt Reynolds
fuck
in this
me,
one?
I'm sweating like a bastard here. All right, I'm trying to do this show. I'm trying to ask questions. I've got a fucking...
Do you want to go to a record and then come back?
Yeah.
Let's play a record.
Oh, this is the Beatles. You've got to hide your love away. Fucking hell. Here I stand.
Oh. You can't make that noise after the Beatles. That's too much. Oh, that was the Beatles. You can go, oh, that was the Beatles, but oh, that was the Beatles. It's too much.
Listen, I'm sweating. I've had me falafel, so all the blood's gone from my head to my belly, right? I've got a bad back. I'm on painkillers, and then Robin walks in, and I just get overexcited. Oh, OK, that was the Beatles. And you've got... To... Literally the worst radio show ever. The worst host. Right, so, OK, let's ask Robin some questions. Right, this is the Proust questionnaire. Right, what is your idea of perfect happiness?
I do like moments where if I've been walking through New York and gone down to a load of bookshops and then I'm sitting in a diner having a coffee and a muffin and reading all the books that I've got.
Even though he says muffin. Like. He says muffin. Oh, good.
No, so I like that. But also, I mean, it's probably going to be one of my favourite things, Reece, is one of my favourite things is just sitting in the garden reading comic books with my son as well. And he loves things like Beano and stuff like that, and which was American listeners, like a British comic, very popular British comic for kids. And I'll be reading some like Alan Moore thing or whatever. And then I got him a comic the other day and I hadn't checked the contents. You know that now there's lots of comics where, because there was, and it was by Mark Miller and it was The Ultimates, which is one of the Marvel series. And I love that moment where, I mean, my son's 10 and I gave him this comic and then I rang him up that night and I said, oh, did you get the comic I left for you this morning? He went, Dad, it was not appropriate. I thought that was just beautiful.
How old is he?
He's 10. He went, it wasn't appropriate, Dad. Language, and there's all stuff going on in it. Oh. So we can't read it.
Oh, God.
Whereas I think our generation would have gone, it's not appropriate, and parents don't know. That's good. Mm. He reported, no, it's not appropriate.
Wow. Okay, what's your greatest fear?
Oh, do you know what? It is probably being horribly burnt. I don't like that idea at all.
Yeah. Well, we settled on spiders because we discussed this a couple of shows where your greatest fear is like, oh, being burnt, being drowned, losing your arms and legs. And I was going, but you can always add to it. What if you lose your arms and legs and you're in a bucket of your own wee and someone keeps coming in and putting their willy in your eye?
Right.
So, you know what I mean? You can keep adding to it. So, I think, badly burnt. Now, do you mean badly burnt, the fear and the... And
the agony. I tell you what, one of my biggest fears is living with it, perpetual agony forever.
Yeah, of course.
I really
torture,
don't
of course
like
it is.
That idea
of course,
all.
Pain. Mm. Yeah, pain. Nothing but pain is by definition the worst. Yeah.
So I don't know. Spiders, I've got a problem with. Mice, I haven't got a problem with. Snakes, I'm not bad on generally.
But they wouldn't be your greatest fear anyway, would they?
Greatest fear, no.
Although if you're phobic of any of them, being put in, you know, room 101, it's got George Orwell, you know, that your greatest fears... multiplied and forever, that is torture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although, if you're being scared, but if you're terrified of mice, right, and you're in a room with loads of mice, and you're screaming, and after a while you go, oh, I can't be bothered, I've got a sore throat, and they're not so bad.
Well, that's the point. More often than not...
Pain doesn't stop.
Either you're going to be dead because they're rabid mice who've bitten you into pieces.
Yeah.
Or you're going to go, well, it's just some things moving around. You're right, that's the...
Yeah, but that doesn't happen with being burnt. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You don't get used to it.
You don't get used to it, do you? It's like...
And that's why probably too serious. It was... I just remember as a kid, there was an episode of a TV series called Raffles. It's all about a gentleman thief.
Yeah.
And there was this bit where, at the end, one of these guys, his dressing gown catches fire. And I must have seen it when I was about 5 years old. That, and I mean, the big one, which we've talked about before, was rabies. Rabies, when I was a child, was absolutely petrifying because there were all of these public information films, which basically went,
I saw
if
real
you
footage.
Touch a dog... Yeah. They used to do that. They'd mix it up. They'd have a little girl going over to a Labrador... and then they go, you've touched a dog. And then they'd suddenly go, and there'd be this weird music.
I did the soundtrack.
And there would be just this child going, ah! And then it would go back to the little girl walking into a doctor's and she would be having an injection in her belly button.
Oh, yeah.
And it's meant to be the most painful injection in the world. It doesn't even cure you of rabies. They just do it as like kind of because you're an idiot that patted a dog. That was a strange dog that had come from France. And I used to find that terrifying.
Yeah, la rage.
Of all of the public information films. I don't know if they had... I've seen some of the US ones, but I don't think they have the same culture in terms of, you know, every day we'd be told, are you having fun? It'll probably kill you.
Yeah.
You know, the electrocution, drowning...
Quicksand.
Just hurting yourself is enough. I fell over. I got a satchel from the jumble sale once and it was too long for me and I tripped over it and smacked my head on the pavement and I thought, oh, my God, I don't want to hurt myself ever again. Right? I remember when I was about... 6, and there must have been some sort of pedo warning, And my mum said to me, don't go in that public toilet in the park. I went, why not? Right? And she couldn't, obviously, she didn't want to explain what paedophilia was. So she went, there's a man, he cuts little boys' willies off. I thought, that's the worst thing I've ever fucking heard. Mm. So it did the trick. I didn't go in the public toilet ever again.
So, which is why you wee so much during the show. I mean, because obviously there's an edit point, so the listeners don't know that you wee about five times in the show because you go, it's a safe weeing place. Because in this studio, there's just a locked door. It's just one place. There's no way a man could hide with a pair of scissors to cut off your willy.
I mean,
you're fine.
Imagine the way, how old I am and the way I look, me being scared of paedophiles. It really isn't a concern anymore. They'd see me and go, they'd throw up. I imagine most paedophiles are younger than me.
And just go, we met before, haven't we? it's another bloke with a beard that I know. Sorry,
You imagine that most paedophiles are younger than you?
I'm 57.
Well, can't you get old paedos?
You can, but I'm saying statistically...
Well, there's going to be more young ones.
I'd have thought so. It's not a survey
honest,
I've ever done.
Not, it's not. It's one of the hardest surveys to do, is to go on the street with a clipboard and go, hello,
can I ask a few questions about paedophiles? I picture an old one, not a young one.
Yeah, but you're picturing an old one. Yeah. It was probably when you were younger and you picture a paedo, so it was an old one. He was probably 42. Exactly. Yeah. 57, they've all been caught or they've given up.
So anyway, if you're listening and you'd like to help with the survey, just send
Are you a paedophile under 57? Please call in and let us know.
There's another public information film which I'd never seen before. My son showed it to me the other day. I went, Dad, this is stupid. Do you remember one where it's just a woman running and he goes, you never know what's round the corner. And then suddenly she runs directly into two men carrying a plate glass window.
Don't run.
The idea of actually saying to the whole population, don't run.
I know.
Doesn't matter what you're... it's on fire. Don't run, though.
Don't run with scissors.
Run.
I mean, how often did that happen? Don't run with scissors. He's running around with scissors again. Yeah. I once, when I was little, and I mean like five... I had my mum's scissors, right? She sort of made dresses, right? And there was a really long sort of shears with points. And I just wanted to know what it felt like, so I just touched the point on my eyeball.
Oh, my God.
And I just touched it to see what it was
like. Oh, my God.
Oh, God, I think
and
that
And she
worked.
Said, don't do that, Rick. That's the pair of scissors the man uses down the public toilet. They're
you've
all
got,
dirty.
You've got pedo willy eye. He's got pedo willy eye. Fucking hell. Already we're on to fucking pedo willy eye.
So anyway, my book, I'm Joking, So Are You, is now available.
Robin's got a book out. What's it called?
No, we'll do that later.
We'll plug it later. What we've done, Greatest Happiness, Greatest Fear. This would take you ages, Robin. What is the trait you most deplore in yourself?
Oh, it is just a general... I mean... I think it's perpetual paranoia of like the fact that now if a phone rings at any time of day, it used to have to be after 10 at night. After 10 at night, why is the phone ringing? Someone's died or there's been an accident. Yeah. Now, 9 in the morning. Why would anyone ring me at 9 in the morning unless they were reporting a death of someone?
I hate that.
So I think that... And
I've got the fear of bad news. Like, everything's going so well. And then you go, oh, yeah, but...
movies, when... it's like, I don't even... like, if someone says, how are you? If you go, oh, I'm feeling great, never say that, because it was amazing, because he was saying he was feeling great, and it turned out nearly the whole of his body inside was actually a tumour, and he died 2 days later.
Yeah.
Because that's the way movies and books work, which is if you go, I've never felt better, you die immediately.
Yeah, luckily, I always feel shit.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem for me.
So it's paranoia, is it, for you?
Yeah, I just find it tedious. It's that the presumption of kind of.
But you wouldn't say it's not by nowhere near a mental illness of it. When you think about it, you let yourself. I mean, I think you try and not let yourself think too much about anything other than something you're producing. That's why you're reading 9 books at the same time. You're writing 4 blogs.
Oh, do you think that's why?
I think so.
Overthinking things.
He can't be alone with himself because also he doesn't sleep. Reading his Twitter in the morning at like 10 hours when I'm going, I can't fucking sleep. What is wrong with me?
Now, I only do it once and I will warn people. I'll go, if I tweet at 5 a.m, it will appear to be fucking insane because that's the point. If you're an insomniac, do you ever have insomnia?
No.
And I'm not an insomniac. I just had, when I was doing the Edinburgh Fringe Festival last month, I happened to have like 2 weeks of it. And there's a bit where you go, it's going to be fine, I'm just going to lie, I'm just going to lie, I'm relaxing, it's not a problem. And then the moment that it starts to be dawn, you go, fuck this, it's ridiculous. How can you forget how to sleep? And the people don't, how can your body go, oh no, I've been exhausted all day, and then my body, oh, I don't know how to do this. And that, and then everyone you meet will come up to you and say, oh, I've heard you got insomnia. Have you tried? And you fucking tried everything they've ever mentioned. Have you tried lavender oil? Yes! Have you tried chamomile tea? I've never even heard of that. Where'd you get that speciality from? But in Edinburgh, it was great because every time someone shook hands with me, they basically passed me a blister pack of something else. So I had this huge collection. Try these beta blockers. Try this tramazepam.
Well,
have
you tried David Baddiel suffered with it recently.
And have you tried David Baddiel? He does talk in books and I'm straight off.
Well, he said, I didn't sleep a wink last night, right? And I had some so-and-so, I took an herbal thing, I had some green tea and masturbated 3 times. I go, why are you tweeting that?
Yeah.
Well, maybe keep that bit to yourself, David. Where does that go?
Well, that was, I remember once, I can't remember if we talked about this when he was on, but with his mum once, where a friend of mine was working on Fantasy Football, the TV show he did in the 90s, and his mum said, oh, I haven't read David's book yet. And she went, oh, we've got one up in the office. And she came down with it. And then he went, oh, my God, you haven't given her the book yet. I haven't explained some of the things in it. And I think there was a lot of, you know, kind of whether stories of masturbation, which he'd hoped to, you know, get out in the open with his mum before she actually read the whole book about his insomnia. But I think that's part of the problem. If you've got insomnia, you start to do all of these rituals, and then that makes it worse. The thing you've got to do is just lie there staring at the ceiling.
Sometimes
and eventually you'll stop doing it. But if you go, right, I've put the earplugs in, I've got the lavender oil on my pillow, I've got my special masturbating glove that's meant to make it sleepier as well because it's got those strange suckers on. You know, whatever it is.
Have you tried ASMR?
Oh, what's that?
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Here we go. What's
he obviously hasn't.
What is it? What's the meridian?
I told you about it. It's when you watch the people make video clips to help people sleep.
Right.
And it's basically someone whispering.
Yeah, but if you're watching
or turning pages.
Oh. But
really slowly.
It needs to be just audio though, doesn't it? Not a video, because you're watching something. Your eyes are open.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the way someone moves.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So no, it's like whispering wouldn't work. The idea that I've got something that's going to. It's coming for you. Yeah, there we go.
Oh,
I know. No, I don't want to. Whispering, not.
Whispering works for me.
Does it?
Certain people, there's a Scottish woman who can make me fall asleep in 5 seconds.
Wow.
It's incredible.
So what's the name of the.
ASMR.
And is this Scottish woman. Or is it just recording?
Hire her.
Yeah, you shouldn't just sit in the room in a rocking chair.
No, it's YouTube. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Give it a try.
Okay.
What's it called again?
ASMR. ASMR.
We'll try that.
Everyone's heard of it.
I listen to music.
Do you?
Talking of which, this is Kate Bush and This Woman's Work. Kate Bush, This Woman's Work. I'm here with Diane Morgan, who's going to bring out a range of sandwiches soon called Old Man Sandwiches. Just plain, just cheese, corned beef.
Do you think they'll work? Do you think they'll be popular? Because I like that kind of a sandwich.
I think they'll work in the north of England, and then I think there's somewhat ironically down in the, you know, like Hoxton, sort of trendy people going, oh, I love old man sandwiches. Mm. It's just, but then again, you've got the ethical problem because those, the sort of hippies and all that, they wouldn't want corned beef, would they?
Well, you don't have to have corned beef. There's cheese.
Oh, well, what about cheese? What about dairy farming?
So it's just cheese.
Yeah,
I don't think
cheese,
that is an old man sandwich, because I think the pickle would definitely be there.
No. Just cheese. Cheese and bread and butter. That's all you need.
Call it prison sandwiches. Mm.
Prison sandwiches.
But do you want a prison sandwich? Doesn't sound like an offer of a snack. That's the kind of...
Yeah. Definitely a euphemism. So Robin's got a little book out, haven't you?
Mm.
You worked on it for... is this the one that where you had 100,000 words, you had to cut it down, and then you had 120,000?
200,000 words at one point, and that was when they basically went, we're going to need another editor. It was like a kind of moment in Jaws, we're going to need a bigger editor. And it was because I just started writing and I wrote like a lunatic. It was like the, you know, in The Shining where all work and no play, but with more different words. And I was just like hammering away going, this is a good chapter. And then basically I started reading it back and I realised why the editor was in tears, because it made... no sense to anyone unless they lived in my head. It was one of those bits where it was just like, here's another thing about comedy and here's another thing about humanity and here's another idea.
Is that what it's about then, comedy? And
it's kind of
I have thought about that though, with your stand-up, because your stand-up is always, it's great and it goes off on one and it's never quite the same. And it's like, you've probably done, if I've done like I don't know how much, but on stand-up, what have I done? 8 hours of comedy in my lifetime? You do that a year.
Yeah, it's...
But it's gone. It's sort of gone. You don't
I'm always amazed at that. I'm always amazed at how... I don't know how you find that after you've done a tour, that the moment you start working on something else, is you start to erase everything that you did on the last show. Like someone said to me, do you remember that bit you did in your... And I only stopped touring in July, my previous show. And I went, oh, God, I can't remember any of it now because I've written two new shows since then.
That's
so
mad.
So
this book?
The basic idea of it, well, I interviewed you for it, of course, in a chapter about ethics, which were you and Tim Minchin and Barry Crimmins, who I've talked about on the show before, the late comedian Barry Crimmins. Each chapter is, there was this kind of, when Robin Williams died, I was, that night I happened to be doing a show called Cheaper Than Therapy about mental health and comedy. A guy up in Edinburgh with Eddie Pepitone. Do you know Eddie?
No, I know of him.
Brilliant American comic, Eddie Pepitone. If you're listening, go watch the film about him, The Bitter Buddha. It's a fantastic film. And then thinking that Robin Williams was a real icon for me. When I was about 14, 15 years old, you know, it was Robin Williams and Rick Mayall. They were my two big kind of, you know, comedy pinups. And then I was reading the next day all these newspapers kind of going, it's another The Tragedy of the Comedian, The Tears of the Clown. And I thought, I think this is bullshit, actually, because I think, one, he didn't kill himself because he was a comedian. You know, there may be many different reasons that he took his life, but he was extremely ill. He was suffering from something called Lewy bodies syndrome, which means he was kind of having hallucinations. He was lots of
really?
Different, yeah, so there were lots of things going on in his life. And I started to think there's so many cliches about comedians about, you know,
I've never understood
comedians it. Comedians to get depressed, are they? Because they're... tell jokes.
Yeah,
everyone gets depressed. That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm trying to... In the book, I was thinking, the good thing about comedians is we're quite exaggerated human beings. And so what you do when you go on stage is you are an exaggeration yourself.
Exactly.
You are exaggerating when you're performing some of the comedy characters. Mm. You know they come a little bit from you and then you become... So it's basically using that as the anatomical model and looking at imagination, how we work out what your ethics are, because a joke is the quickest way to work out what someone believes sometimes. Mm. If someone tells a joke and you think, oh, hang on a minute, I think that joke's a bit, oh, I don't know if I like that, and you think, oh, that may well come down to the fact that this is their set of beliefs.
It gets complicated with irony, though, because that can be the opposite.
Irony is, of course,
saying the opposite thing to show the stupid view of that person who's the opposite of the way you think, and that's where a lot of offence can come from. So you can be doing the right thing, but it looks like it's the wrong thing. So irony is the odd one out.
That's right. In the ethics chapter, that's what I'm looking at, is how far, you know, what jokes are you prepared to tell and what in terms of how much upset are you prepared to cause and...
Through confusion, confusion,
yeah. In fact, just how much upset if you've got a lot. So things like that. And then in the imagination chapter, I talked to Alan Moore.
Why didn't you get Alan Moore on?
Oh, Alan Moore's so good. There is something. When we're talking about talking books and things like that, Jerusalem, which is a book that's longer than the Old Testament.
Yeah, I've got it.
It's so good. I've read it. And there's a beautiful thing where Alan Moore, when he was asked why, because his book originally thought was going to be longer than the Bible. And then it turned out it's only longer than the Old Testament, which is the huge bit of the Bible. And when he was asked, why is your book so long? He said, so only the strongest can critique me. I thought that's just a beautiful thing. And it's this great big... So I talked with him and Noel Fielding from the Boosh about that. You know, when do you find yourself sometimes with a need to perform, a need to, like when I stopped doing stand up for a bit, there was a little point where I went, oh, I've got to start doing it again now. Yeah. I've got so many ideas and I've got to start letting them out. Because even in the week off I had after Edinburgh, I find when I walk around the house, I talk to myself.
They sort of back up inside you, don't they, if you don't get them out? Yeah.
I don't find I have to officially perform, no. I never thought.
So you could stop tomorrow, and as long as you could sort of like
squeeze Robin's head,
to friends and stuff.
But that gives me a lifestyle as well. When I do have to create, I think, I mean, I couldn't stop coming up with silly ideas. You can't help what comes into your head, and I'd still do that. Mm. And I'd probably have some outlet, but I'm not one of these people that thinks I have to be on telly tonight or I have to do a film this year.
No, but that's because you're showing off all the time.
Yeah, I think so.
If it's not just Jane and you, if a third person is added to the room, you make sure you find the pyjama bottoms that do have the bigger hole in them so you can pull bits of yourself out, and you will say things to deliberately kind of go, you know, annoy, you know what I mean? So I think...
He's talking about awful gym jam. I invented that game for Jane where an old holy pair of pyjamas, I might pull some out and I have to, is it cock or ball?
Yeah. just a fun. It's a kind of game that someone invents for their partner just to spice up their existence or indeed push them away further, one or the other. So, yeah, so it looks a lot. And there's things like there's a chapter about why we become what we become. A while ago on this show, I talked a little bit about the when I was just before I was 3 years old, being in a major car accident.
Yeah.
Which I thought was my fault. Because, you know, when you were a little kid, so I was looking for my toy machine gun but in the passenger seat, and then there was a car on the wrong side of the road which smashed right in there. My mum was knocked unconscious and was in a coma for a long time and stuff like that. And of course, I thought it was my fault. So I'm looking at how true it is. People will talk about comics like, you know, Eddie Izzard lost his mum when he was very little.
When you say, of course, I thought it was my fault, do you mean you consciously did that or subconsciously something happened to you and you had to compensate and you didn't know why until you were 40?
No, when you're a kid, I think you do one thing and something else happens in the other room. And when you're that small, and you think everything is kind of connected. So, right. You know, why is my mum screaming? Why is this happening? Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, point was, I did something wrong.
Oh, really?
You
think you had that conscious thought, though?
Yeah. No, I was very aware of it. Very, very aware of that. So it's... But what I find most interesting about being human is that idea that somebody want to go, well, this is caused by genetics and this is caused by culture. And, of course, this is one of the... There's quite a few scientists that I talked to in the book. And it's just a hodgepodge. So of there's course. Something that might have happened to you and there's something that might have happened to you.
Yeah.
But also it's all the other events around it that might, you know, because otherwise everyone who thought they'd caused a car accident when they're 3 years old, the comedy circuit would be absolute, it would be overburdened.
Well, I think the best thing about that nature versus nurture argument, but I think the psychiatrist Piaget was asked what's more important, nature or nurture. He said, what's more important to the area of the field, the length or the width?
Yeah.
You know, it depends. It's a mixture of both. But I never thought that when you said you thought it was your fault, I thought that was some sort of therapy, for, you know, 30 years. Then you think, oh, you actually thought, oh my God.
Oh, yeah, no, I remember. I remember the.
Oh,
yeah,
terrible.
And there's a thing which a neuroscientist, Dean Burnett, talks about, which is, it's called flashbulb memory. And that is when something major happens, because of course our memories start at different ages. Some people I've spoken to don't really have any memories from before they were 8 or 9 years old.
Really?
Yeah,
I know.
Eight
I find
or
that
nine?
I find that amazing.
That's mine's three
weird.
Or four.
Yeah,
I remember my sister teaching me to read at three.
I think three I would have thought was about. But then you have certain memories that if they're major incidents, that they're called flashbulb memories. They kind of become imprinted on the brain even
more.
As like a
photograph.
Yeah,
it
is like, if you know that moment where you see it in movies or you see it in, where that flashbulb goes off and just right, there's this still.
And is that relative to importance?
Yeah. So it's relative to the importance you as
put
a
on
child
it, of course.
Feel
of
at
course.
That second.
Yeah.
So, and it will be normally something involving an accident, a loss, whatever it might be. You know, it can obviously be, you know, things.
I
like
remember the shadow of Santa when I was little, which obviously was my dad in a hat. But I remember that. I still remember it now knowing it wasn't. But that must have been one of those, because I remember just a split second on the wall, and that's like that's a little 1 second GIF that runs in my head.
Well, that was a major part of your belief system then, wasn't it?
Of course it was. Yeah, of course. That's fascinating though. So, what's the point of this book then?
Well, it's basically, a lot of it is saying we're all absurd. And one of the biggest problems I think we have as a group of creatures is that people don't, everyone is ridiculous. That's why it's called I'm a Joke and So Are You.
I think that's fundamental to comedy. I think that comedy is to let us know we're all idiots and it doesn't matter because we're all idiots. Because if we're all idiots, it doesn't matter being an idiot.
And it gives you permission. I mean, I think that's one of the best things about comedy is like in the final chapter where I talk about death, and I can't remember if it made it in the end. There was like, I had this one story the day before my mum died. I ended up doing a radio show and I had a terrible attack of diarrhea. And the thing about it that was fun was at least going, and now this becomes a story. This becomes part of, while you're also dealing with the fact that you're about to lose someone, there's also something that fucking ridiculous. I mean, basically what happened was, you've had Brian Cox on this show.
Yeah.
We were
Robin loves Cox.
We get on well. Yeah. Hang on! Oh, trapped by entendre. But there was... So on the day, we're recording a Christmas special of the show that we do, the radio show, the podcast, The Infinite Monkey Cage. And as the day goes on, I'm getting little messages saying, oh, Mum's getting a lot worse, actually. I'm like, should I come back? No, it's fine. And then I end up in that very English situation of saying to the producer, I'm awfully sorry because I know everything's booked and it's really going to put people out. But my mum might be about to die, so I might have to go. I mean, I'll try not to. And you go, how fucking English is that?
Yeah,
that bit of going... Yeah. I don't want to put anyone out. It's just that my mum's
dad. I know.
But I checked up on everything, and it was like, and one of my nieces was saying, look, it's fine. And I said, look, I'm going to get in a cab the moment that I finish recording. She said, it's fine. You know, she's settled down now. And then just had this half an hour before the show, I suddenly went, oh, God, this doesn't feel right. And my stomach just... And I mean, looking back now, I think even at the time, I thought this is what happens when you're under stress that you're trying to control, is there is a point where your body and your brain go, you can't have everything, mate. You've got to record a show now, so you're going to have to use your brain. Now, if you're going to have to use your brain, we really aren't able to concentrate on the colon or anything like that, so you're going to be all over the shop down there. So you could cancel it, and then we don't have to be in the brain, but and we can go down there and bring it all back together.
But also, there is a... Your stomach, in a sense, has got a brain,
yeah.
and it bypasses... That's what your gut feeling is. It is, it's something that you know deep down is right,
yeah,
and wrong, and it's a guilt. So guilt kicks in and says, you know, your brain has made you think that it's okay to stay there, but your stomach hasn't got that. It hasn't got that PC.
And then you're saying to your stomach, well, this isn't helping because I can't get in a cab now because they hate it when you shit all over them.
Yeah.
Even if you do say, I'm sorry about doing that.
I think that's deep. When I say a gut feeling, it's not the opposite of what's probably right and logical. It's actually closer to what you know the truth is. Mm. So your gut feeling is, oh, I know what's right and wrong. My gut feeling, it's telling me, without all the highfalutin stuff and the philosophy that's making you feel better about your decision, your gut saying, you know, you should really go. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't listen.
There's a chapter here called Is There a Real You?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Oh, well, that's kind of... I'll just finish telling the thing about the diarrhea thing. Like,
sure.
So what happened was... we go on, I've taken loads of Imodium, and I go and sit in front of the audience, and I think, right, I better explain to the audience, not about what's going on in my home, but I said, just so you know, we're doing a bit of an experiment on the show today. We're going to find out if Imodium is effective for the entire recording time of an episode of The Infinite Monkey Cage. So, and then Brian Cox, being a physicist, and they have a strange sense of humour, we have a bottle of sherry, because it was a Christmas special, and he's uncorking it and recorking it over and over again next to the microphone, going, it might create some kind of psychosomatic effect. And so he's doing that, going, you're not helping, mate. And then for an hour, my brain is in four different places where I'm both presenting the show and then every now and again going, oh, bloody hell, it's all right. And then another bit of me that's going, oh, yeah. In little pauses, you suddenly go, something major is happening outside this particular world. And then about an hour in, I turned to the physicist, Faye Dowker, and I went, Faye, because there was a point where my body just went, oh, really? We can't? No, not anymore. You've tried, but no. And I said, Faye, we've been talking a lot about the nature of physics in the 20th century and indeed our changing ideas of the universe and the idea of four dimensions and, of course, the relativistic nature of time and the fact that it becomes time, no longer time and space, but space-time. And I wonder how you feel. In many ways, that's affected late 20th century science fiction writing, and you have as long as you want to answer that. And I just sped off and
went to the toilet.
It was this kind of. So it's about the absurdity of all of those. Yeah, so the real you is just that bit where, of, you know, when people go, but who was the real Diane? Who was she really? Because, of course, on screen,
so just be yourself, voices, and a lot of people don't know who they are.
Yeah. But they usually
is the miserable. There's always that story of, you know, well, of course, I knew him as a comic, and in fact, when he was off stage, often he was very, very sad. But it doesn't mean he's sad all the time. You know, in fact, in a biography of Robin Williams that I read recently, which is very well written, but I think it spends too much time saying, of course, Robin Williams was very sad. And he was very successful that day, but he was very sad. Mm. And there's a bit
also,
where you go, we're a multitude. We're this idea that there is one you. Yeah, sometimes when you're on your own, you're a very deep-thinking individual, and sometimes when you're in the pub, you're an absolute dick and you're larking about. It doesn't mean that the real me, of course, is
but also
the one sat
some,
on his own.
Sometimes you don't
poetry.
Want to burden people. If someone, if your shopping says, how is it going? You don't want to say, well, actually, I've been thinking of, like, you know, killing people and then turning the gun on myself. You know, you don't burden people with it unless it gets a bit. And that's what's sad about it as well, that sometimes, you know, you should. But I've never bought this. It's this cliche that's been used by, you know, half a dozen examples, which is probably less than the average rate for anyone else, let alone comedians, that it was hiding something. Making people laugh is hiding something. That could be true, but it's not necessarily
also,
true.
Also, I think it might be the opposite now. I don't know what you think, Dan, but there's, like, in the post-war years, I think there were lots of comics who did have a secret, and very often that was something like sexuality, because, you know, to be gay was actually, you know, illegal.
Yeah.
For instance, drinking, mental health, again, post-traumatic stress disorder. And so when they went on stage, look at me, I'm happy, and then go off. Whereas now we have an enormous number of comics who do shows which are them revealing about, you know, whether it's about their social anxiety, whether it's about, you know, Hannah Gadsby's show Nanette, which has been absolutely huge, but, you know, as a live show on Netflix, is her saying, this is my, I'm now going to reveal to you.
Of course. This. But and that's, so a bit, think, that's in my lifetime, though.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's in the last 20, 30 years where people have been discussing depression and what it is. Before that, it was not diagnosed. So,
yeah.
And particularly not in the working class male.
Yeah.
No. If my dad was depressed, he got drunk and went to bed. Mm. It was never, you know, and then he was, got, I don't know. I have no idea if there was depression in my family growing up, because no one would have admitted it or talked about it. So, I mean, that's the thing. Nowadays, it's discussed.
And that is why I think comedy is useful, is that when people do those... Oh, it's useful for lots of different reasons, just having fun. But it's also when sometimes you see one of those shows and you see people coming up afterwards and they say, oh, I thought I was the only one. And that bit of not being the only one. There's a bit in the final chapter I talk about a time where... I was doing a gig in Adelaide and I got chatting to the woman who was kind of the wrangler who took me around and showed me where the theatre was and where my hotel was. And she said to me, you should do more material about suicide. And the reason she said that was her daughter had killed herself. And she said, I think if more people just kind of talked about it, then... And so I then took a bit of time off stand-up. And when I came back, I thought, do you know what? I'm going to try and write something. And it was really hard because I thought, how do you deal with that without people switching off or just going, no, you're not allowed to, or going for the joke that is just the kind of like, you know, the cheeky joke or whatever. And so I had some amazing conversations with people who'd lost people, therapists, and also a few people who'd attempted suicide and attempted to kill themselves. And this one guy told me these amazing stories. One of his stories, he got in contact. He said, if you want, he said, I'm very happy to take. He said, I tried on three occasions. I'm much happier now, but I went through. And the first story he told me, he said, yeah, he said, it's a very weird thing. It's very hard. When people go, I wasn't expecting them to do it. Part of it is your mindset is so different. He said, the first time I went to kill myself, he said, I was just about to kill myself. And it was a Friday. And just before I did it, I suddenly thought, hang on a minute. Don't kill yourself on a Friday. You'll miss the weekend. Do it on Sunday. I went, and then I tried it on Sunday because I thought, well, I don't want to miss the weekend.
Well, I think about
have
that.
Have a nice weekend.
But
and
I,
then
think,
kill,
I,
and
do,
that,
I think about just, that getting their things in order. And, you know, with people when they jump off a building, they fold their jacket up.
Yeah.
You know, it's... there was a guy who hung himself and he worked for the store where he bought the rope and it came out that he got the staff discount. It's things like that.
Yeah.
The admin thinking, but when you think about it, he didn't think, oh, it's a bargain. They said, do you want your staff to go? And he went, yes, because he probably didn't want to say anything was.
Yeah.
He didn't want to say it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So you go.
Yeah, because you don't want the staff to go.
Yeah,
people.
You've
like,
still
there
got.
There must be something wrong with him.
Yeah, you're still thinking like you did every other day.
Yeah.
It is fascinating that the mindset, but really fucking sad.
Well,
obviously,
there was one person who told me about the when they were standing, they were on a ledge. And they thought, right, I'm going to jump. And then they looked down and they went, oh, I'm in my socks. Oh, hang on a minute. Oh, that would look weird, wouldn't it? If they just find me and I'm all down there and I'm in my socks.
Yeah.
Maybe I should put my shoes on. Oh, hang on a minute. Oh, should I take my socks off? And she started going through all of these different things. And then eventually she went, do you know what? If I'm worried about how they're going to find me, whether people will go, oh, bloody hell, not only she killed herself, but in her socks.
Yeah.
I'm going to judge her, you know. That she went, hang on a minute, I think there's something in me that means I don't actually want to do this. And so getting caught, you know, she might have just leapt, but she just happened to look at her socks and go, oh, hang on a minute, I'm in my socks. Is that a weird thing to do? Is it weird to kill yourself just in your socks? And that was what got her in this dialogue.
We've just filmed my new thing for Netflix called Afterlife, which Diane is in. I play a guy whose wife dies, so he wants to end it all, and he's going to commit suicide. But he doesn't because the dog's hungry. And it gives him time to think. So it is about distractions. It is all about like the little things that keep him going. And so I think those things, I think the things do matter. Those things that, you know, just talking someone down, you're distracting them for a minute. But that, it is fascinating.
We've probably talked about this on this before. I can't, I'm sorry if we have, but that things like guns, which are one of the suicide rates go up because it's immediate. If you actually have to prepare, that's why, you know, in the UK, one of the reasons they believe that, for instance, there was quite a high suicide rate amongst farmers is because farmers have access to guns.
But it's the same reason why there's more violence with guns, because you've got a gun.
Yeah.
I mean, think how many people we'd have shot in the face if we had guns. Do you know what I mean? It's just so, it's so easy. It's just so easy. You can't get angry enough to strangle someone.
Yeah.
And you certainly can't strangle 35 people, then turn the hands on yourself. Mm. So it is because
That was what I remember when we ended up having there was some Twitter argument about from some NRA people. And you got involved in one where there was one we go, yeah, but I mean, you can kill people with an elbow. Yeah, but it's very hard to do 30 people in a school going around going,
of course.
Can someone, and then as you said, and then he turned the elbow on himself. Ow! I wish I'd gone to yoga class. It won't bloody work.
You know, I've got really sharp elbows. Look at that.
Yeah, you could have. Oh, look at that.
Look at that.
You're danger.
Yeah.
Oh, you could have someone. You should do MMA.
What?
Mixed martial arts.
Oh, really?
Oh, that would cave someone's head in.
Do you use your elbows then in that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, inflict a nasty cut, an elbow, and I'm like, yeah.
Have you done it?
I have. As if with my fucking back.
How did it go? Well, he bowed down
and then we
carried him out, still at a right angle. We placed him on the right angled stretcher, which we had specially for him.
Well, we've had squeaking and, again, it probably not as bad as some shows have been, but we got round to suicide pretty quick. So let's have a little song, shall we? Let's have David Bowie, Where Are We Now? David Bowie, Where Are We Now? We're talking about loads of stuff. Robin's book.
Miserable stuff again.
Miserable stuff again.
Well, the book's not miserable,
No, we always get round to death, though, don't we?
We're
always
reached an age. Because you're youngest, John. How old are you?
42.
Is that your agent's age for you, or is that real?
That's real.
Okay. But I think there is that point where you just go, I wasn't expecting this to happen so soon. The fact that the number of times you go, oh, you heard about Tony? Oh,
I know,
bloody hell. And you go, oh, I didn't realize mortality. Suddenly, there's a bit where you go, oh, my grandmother's died. And then it only seems next week you go, oh, now my mum's dead.
What? Well, I know, yeah.
I think I told you this horrifying statistic, which is, I'm not sure how this has been measured, but I was reading a science book which said that we've experienced 2/3 of our subjective sense of the passing of time by the time we're 8 years old. And then you just go, whoa, slow down.
2/3?
Yeah.
How can that be by
So that's why kids are so bored in cars and stuff. It's their time. It's like, oh, God, when's this journey going to end? And you go, it's Christmas again.
Yeah, it's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah, John Mortimer, the great writer of Rumpole of the Bailey and many other things, and he said when you get to 80, life's just having breakfast. You sit down, you have breakfast, and then you go, oh, I've just watched Foyle's War and bedtime again.
Yeah.
Oh, it's breakfast, Foyle's War, bedtime
But that's
again.
Not, but that's, I'm getting like that, though. Now I sort of, you know, I go, like to go to bed like by 10 if I can, right? Then I have a little nap. You know what I mean? The weekend, it's a walk, it's lunch, a little nap, and I think, oh, I better work out, have a bath, and then I can drink again and go to bed
as well,
at 10.
Like a retired couple.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Why not? We asked Diane when we were doing these questions before, the Proust questionnaire, if you could choose any way to die, and she said gas, and then I went, why gas? She went, well, why not? I said I'd choose him asleep. She went, oh, I didn't think of that. So she jumped straight to being gassed to death. So what's your ideal way to die?
Yeah, sleep. It's that one where you want to be remembered. Do you know
it's
what?
It's too easy to sleep
gone,
on, isn't it?
Gone
what
to...
if you sleep, you can't die in your sleep?
So you got to
now
die.
What? Actually, eyes... I can't, can I, with the insomnia? I'll just be lying there going, I'm going to die in my sleep. I have an insomnia now. I'm now 173 years old. My fucking toes have dropped off. But I can't fall asleep, so I can't die in my sleep.
I know, yeah. I think a worse way to die then.
Do you know one that I love? In the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie, there is a brilliant moment where Willem Dafoe, as the Green Goblin, is killed. And it's just that something goes wrong and basically he's shot with a crossbow. And there's just this fantastic moment as he realises it's all gone tits up and he just goes, oh.
Yeah.
And to me, to die going, oh.
Yeah.
So not an oh of fear, but like, that went tits up. Something absurd, I think. Something
slow
that'll
and agonising.
Yeah, steamroller. Yeah. You
steamroller.
Yeah,
thing.
You jump in front of a steamroller.
Yeah, go on.
You jump in front of a steamroller, but you jump too early, so you've got another couple of seconds just watching this slow thing. There goes over your hand first, then your arm.
You hear the crunching.
You hear the crunch, and you scream, right? And your scream just gets to your jaw, and your eyes pop out, and you go, "Stop!" And then the bloke comes out.
Wouldn't your body pack in about the ribs? Wouldn't you just think?
Well, what if you're laying to it like, and it's, you know, you're sort of like, you're on the floor, like in a crucifix position, and he comes along up your arm first, one arm, and then...
Yeah, but then you've got the head straight away, haven't you? So that's not so long.
Yeah, but you're...
Oh, he steers round you. What? So he steers round
the
head.
No, he squashes... No, it's sort of that you're... Like, so your jaw goes before your brain. So you squish your jaw and you scream and he gets out.
How slow is he going? Really?
It's slow. But one mile. And he gets out and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry." And you're going, "Finish me off!" Like that, and your eyes are out, and he has to pop your eyes back in so you can see him. He's a big fat bloke, right?
Or I think he pops screaming. Them back in. I think he's waving them around, so you're seeing all over the shop. So you get, "Stop waving me eyes around, I feel all dizzy," right? And you try and be sick, but you can't because your stomach's already been crushed. So
yeah.
Can you still see if your eyes are, like...
Oh, if they're taken, as long as they're still attached to the optic nerve and stuff. Yeah.
So, like, if that eye's up there, will that eye see up there and that eye will see down there?
Yeah, you get a really confusing image. Don't you? I mean, you can also, but we're used to it. We can see our nose all the time, but our brain phases it out, ignores it.
Oh, yeah.
You could get used to it. You've seen that experiment where they put the glass on upside down?
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
It's great. And the bloke does it for a week, and then he has to get used to having normal eyesight again. So you see everything upside down.
We adapt quite quickly to that,
don't
we?
Yeah, your brain, adapts.
Yeah,
but you don't. If there's, have we talked before about the bicycle? That incredible thing with the bicycle.
It's the opposite of what
where
you.
It moves in the, so when you turn the handlebars to the right, the wheel goes to the left.
Right.
And
so it's counterintuitive, which is really hard for the brain to get over.
Yeah.
So you still want to keep doing what you know is the right thing to do.
And you can't. I tried it, and all of the different things. There was like a bunch of us, including an astronaut actually, Chris Hadfield, right? And every single person initially goes, "Oh, that bloke fell off, but I'll be able to do it because I'll be able to work out very quickly." And you just, your whole brain just goes, "No, get off, fall off."
It's because
it won't. It's like it's against
because it's not planned.
What
because
if I close my eyes? Will it work? Maybe it's a visual stimulus, and that's no. Everything about it. You stand up, you do the first push, and then you just fall off.
No, it's because everything's instinctive. Because it's not one movement riding a bike. It's 1,000 reflex movements. So your brain can't cope with not reflexing. Mm. So every second, your reflex is to balance, and so it's not conscious. So you keep doing what's reflex, and so you can't get used to it. Because it's split second, it's 1,000 split second decisions to stay balanced.
Yeah,
yeah, it's crazy.
Even if you keep it really straight, there's still just enough of a wobble for your brain to go, "Get off."
I love the idea of Robin trying to ride a wobbly bike.
Yeah, it'd be nice that, wouldn't it?
Oh God, I'd have to help him, wouldn't I? We asked for some questions. I haven't looked at them, so this could be an awful thing to do.
The Goodies bike's up for sale. Did you see that?
Oh, the Tandem. Tandem's 2. Tandem's 3.
Oh, is that the word for it?
It's a Trandom, yeah.
Oh.
It's expected to go for like £1,000. I thought it must be more than that.
No, must be more than that. The Goodies.
Yeah.
It's iconic, isn't it?
Does it? No,
but
Americans
then
probably.
No, Americans.
No, the Goodies did all right. It was like, you know, because of Python and stuff like that, I think in terms of early cable days and things like that. I remember when I first went to New York and I got there at midnight and we turned on our station, the first thing that came on was Man About the House with Richard O'Sullivan, followed by Doc 2 and the Genesis of the Daleks. I thought, I've come all this way. And I've got 1975 TV.
You must have.
It's fantastic.
I'd love to do that one day. Like for one day, they do one random day on all like 2 channels. You've got the radio and TV times there, and you've got to watch it. It would be a lot of paedophiles would be popping up, wouldn't it? On 70s British TV, an awful lot of paedophiles.
Oh yeah.
All over the place.
Well, when you watch that television as well, there are some of the kids' shows which then had bits where suddenly a woman in a bra would run past, and you would go, there's stuff that's a bit,
We were talking about...
There must still be loads of pedos on TV.
But do you remember that advert? I just realised there was an advert,
moving
right?
Amongst us, aren't
for
they?
Pedos. Remember, this would mean nothing to Americans or anyone actually under 50, right?
Just like our conversation about on the buses.
No, it was this way. It goes, Charlie, I was playing in the garden with Charlie and a man came along and offered me a ride and I was going to get in, but Charlie said, "Wow," Charlie's the cat, right? And so I didn't go with him. And when I told Mummy, she was very she said, you're a very good boy for not getting in that man's car. And she gave me an apple, right? Charlie got something he liked. And he got a fish. It was a little cartoon. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Charlie says, don't go with pedos. Charlie says, cut that nonce. Charlie says, stab that nonce in the face. Charlie says, put that nonce on Sea Wing and get him stabbed in the eye with a Bic biro.
See, it's those films that are the reason that I think my generation, we are the most paranoid parents. Even though statistically things are much better in all these situations. You know, I used to go to the woods on my own or go to the woods with my mates, go walk on that. Now, walk to school, my son would go, can I just take the shortcut through the 5-second bit of woods? And if it takes 10 seconds, where's he gone? Oh my God, where's he gone?
I remember playing old disused sort of factories, you know, full of asbestos and stuff.
Well, of course, that's a much bigger risk than a paedophile, isn't it? Getting cut or falling down a broken... Exactly, yeah.
But most people didn't. I mean, that's the thing is, we have these warnings and they are now so embedded in us that I think we're the most paranoid group of parents of the generation who's kind of like in their late 30s or whatever. There's just like, oh, there's danger everywhere. And you go, no, statistically because we can't lose that gut feeling.
I know, and I think we overthink things. But it is true, when you think about it, isn't it amazing that we live this long? Do you know what I mean? When you think
depressing.
About being drunk, walking along a wall and mucking around, or, you know, get on the back of a motorbike, when you think, how have we lived this long? It's odd, because we shouldn't. We shouldn't live this long anyway. Our life is prolonged by, I don't know what the wild would be, but probably about 35. Isn't it?
Do you think like 20-year-olds are more cautious now than we were? Because
why?
I don't know. They're more.
They seem to be more. So they're not as. They don't seem to be as
wild or take risks.
Yeah.
You mean with like drugs and
everything, drink, and they don't seem to be as.
I think you're right. Probably true.
I think they've seen their parents being idiots, though, as well. I think, because a friend of mine was saying, I can't believe it. He said, my daughter's 17 years old, and her moment of going, oh, do you know, I'm going to be a bit naughty tonight, is having a hot bath and a glass of rosé, right, you know, compared to that. But I think some of that also is a lot more things are out in the open. So for this generation, you know, watching, things weren't hidden so much. So they just go, do you know what? I remember my parents got drunk, and they were absolute idiots. I don't think I'll drink quite as much.
Right,
well,
yeah.
I didn't drink till I was 18, 19, because I thought, oh, no, I've seen bits of drugs. And then you realise what all the fuss is about. It's brilliant. No, but I also think that polls lie, don't they? So this generation of kids saying, oh, no, I don't do that, they're lying because they think their parents are watching. It's like we did. I didn't confront my mum with smoking and drinking and swearing. I said, no, of course I don't. And I did it anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that confrontation that you take out of it.
I hear from quite a few parents, they do actually go, no, our kids are... Because there's a bit where we're all found out. There's that moment, isn't it, when we are found vomiting in the garden or whatever, or you wake up at the station at the end of the line, you have no idea about how to get back from Aylesbury or whatever it might be. Whereas I think there's just...
Or you wake up on my floor with cock written on your face and on your arm, and then... You have to get on the tube to go home, don't you, Robin?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I didn't get a treat and Charlie didn't get something he liked either in that public information film, because my mum had said, don't go into the flat of that strange man. He's going to feed you chillies, and then when you're asleep, he's going to draw things on your face.
Did you not feel it?
Well, I was totally asleep. We'd gone out, we'd been drinking.
What kind of pen was it?
Magic marker. Oh, yeah, so it took him a while
to get it off. Ages to get it off.
Yeah.
And he didn't say anything to me, so literally it was only the fortunate thing that I thought, I'll just quickly pop before I get on the 63 bus. I'm just going to look, just go to the bathroom. And oh, but I didn't notice all of it, so there were still other bits around me.
Wow.
It had been very, very complete as a work of this kind.
Wonderful,
you know,
cock on his cheek.
What if it never came off?
Well,
how
then
would you
he'd
feel?
Have, it'd be a great tattoo. It'd be a talking point, wouldn't
did
it?
Did you never think...
That wasn't the same day as the you snuck
Chili,
out.
No, Chili's was separate. You're right.
I found the idea was
Chili's.
He had irritable bowel syndrome.
He just put loads of Chili's in the food we were eating. When
I hid them
because he knew that it would be agonising.
And then the next day we were walking along Tottenham Court Road and he was holding his ass, running into heels, trying to find a toilet.
Oh, bloody hell! There's an incontinent old man in the heels toilet. Hurry up! Got chili ass.
Let's play another record. Fucking hell. Why does it always fucking degenerate into nonsense, this fucking show?
I don't know.
Can't I do one show when it's like, I didn't do this with Richard Dawkins.
You were showing off then.
Yeah.
That's what I liked. Have you heard the early show-off shows?
No.
I'm joined by someone who's very clever. Professor Richard Dawkins, you've got the keys to Oxford and everything in that. And I find giraffes fascinating, don't you? What with all the mutation, heredity and natural selection, what makes the neck so long and that. And I wonder if you can explain. Well, I suppose one of the things about its long neck. Exactly, Richard Dawkins. Exactly, Professor Richard Dawkins. Well, I love the DNA as well. Isn't the DNA clever?
The thing is...
But he was showing off.
I was showing off. I was treating him like a nice older man. I didn't want to squeeze. And hug him like I do Robin, so yeah. I did give him a bit more reverence, not because he's very, very clever, but because he's a sweet elder gentleman. So,
what do you think is the most selfish of the genes? If you just had to pick one gene, you think, oh, bloody hell.
Robin came in jeans once because he was trying to be a rock and roll, and I said, oh, look at Robin's lovely blue jeans. Yeah. Is that what you was talking about in your book?
Yeah. In your book, Robin, you does talk about social anxiety, which is very worrying, isn't it, as a thing, and also about the nature of certain human beings. We're a funny old lot, aren't we?
And then soon it goes to, what if you die with a spike up your ass?
Richard Dawkins, right? Now, in terms of the pedo gene, I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave now. Anyway, it's available. £16.99. Goodbye.
Oh, right. Let's play a record. What about Rolling Stones, Fool to Cry? Come on.
Don't like Stones.
Oh, for Rolling Stones, Fool to Cry. This is Ricky Gervais' Deadly Serious with Ricky Gervais, me, Diane Morgan. Say hello.
Hello.
Right. then little Robin Ince. It's been a shambles again.
Well, it's what I love is in the early days of this show, you went, I'm going to have some of the great intellects of the world on this and show off to them and stuff and talk about all clever stuff. And then you went, nah. Just
too hard.
Too hard. Got to do the reading.
I know.
Got to know.
Oh, yeah, you've got to do prep, haven't
you? Yeah.
Tell us about dark matter and that.
I know. And even my attempt of like just literally printing out the Proust questionnaire, which I didn't do. I got someone else to print it out for me. And even that is just heavy going, isn't it? And we got annoyed at that. I'll ask you a couple of questions of that and then we might as well.
Yeah, go on. Let's shoot it. We'll do it fast.
Plug your book.
Yeah, I'm a Joke and So Are You is out now, and it's lots of things about the absurdity of being human, and Ricky's in it, and Tim Minchin, and Josie Long, and loads of other people that I've talked to.
Get into the mind of little Robin Ince.
Yeah.
Diane Morgan, she hasn't got anything to plug, except she wants to bring out a brand of sandwiches called Old Man Sandwiches, which is plain cheese, plain tuna...
Corned beef.
So if there's any...
Any
I don't
takers?
Know.
Any takers?
Yeah, I don't
Anyone
know if there's any
sponsor me Honda or someone.
I don't think. Why wouldn't you go for a food like an outlet?
Maybe
a food.
We want to branch out.
So you're gonna put out sandwiches, right? You expect Honda to go into putting out Old Man Sandwiches?
Why not?
Because they do cars and motorbikes.
Well, why don't they branch out?
But why don't you go for someone who does food
I
already?
I couldn't think of anyone. I could only think Honda.
Wow. I don't think you're cut out for this.
Food.
If this was...
What, the food? Yamaha?
Yamaha.
Harley Davidson. Harley Davidson sandwiches, plain cheese from Harley D. McDonald's, like when... Coke, just someone who is in the sort of catering, in the catering world.
Don't need me, do they?
No. No one does. Does need your sandwich. I meant your sandwiches.
No, I think you meant the culinary stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with your idea, it's a lovely idea, but the great thing about Old Man Sandwiches are you make them because you make them yourself. You wouldn't... Do you know what I mean? That's the point.
Yeah, but sometimes you haven't got time, you're out and about.
And you want an Old Man Sandwich?
I want an Old Man Sandwich.
My God! So, Denny's. Across America, somewhere across America.
Denny's, is that a thing?
It's a food chain. McDonald's.
They do them already, though, don't they? They are kind of quite old man sandwiches, Denny's, aren't they? Those.
Yeah, but I want a picture of an old man, right? Which is actually Diane with a flat cap on and a woodbine.
Yeah.
And it's just a cut-out picture of you. Diane Morgan's Old Man Sandwiches. Plain cheese.
And then, like a Coke advert over the top in wavy writing, it just goes, drink gravy.
Yeah. I'm liking it more and more.
With it, take with cup of tea.
Yeah, just normal tea.
Normal tea, yeah.
Not a fancy coffee.
No, normal tea.
Normal
yeah.
tea.
Old Man Sandwich and Builder's Tea from the Diane Morgan range.
Brilliant.
That would be, yeah, with Christy Teigen or whatever there. There's an advert with her and she's just there dunking a corned beef sandwich in her tea.
Yeah.
And then picking out one of the flecks of meat that's
I tell you what, get
top.
One of the Kardashians to tweet it.
Yes.
I don't. What's that billionaire? Is it Kyle Jenner or who's the other one?
One of them.
Yeah. Elon Musk. I bet he'd want to put money into sandwiches. Oh, like, he'd get the munchies. Because yes. he's going to Mars, what are we going to have? Well, we normally have paste. Fuck that.
Yeah.
What I reckon astronauts would rather have, old man sandwiches. And they're
yes,
up there.
Corn
and every
beef.
Now and again, it's floating off in like near zero gravity bits yeah. there of the because that's the thing, old man sandwiches, if you have the cheese ones, it's not gonna, as long as it's not grated,
it's not
gonna
go
they wouldn't
anywhere,
be grated,
is it?
Would
yeah.
it? They're gonna be solid lumps.
Solid chunks.
Whereas if you went up there with a sandwich which's got chickpeas in it and bits of coriander,
yeah,
they're
hummus,
eating and they're halfway
yeah.
to Mars and they're going, oh, there's bloody coriander all
yeah.
over the
yeah.
whole capsule.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
It, yeah, you can trace down a chunk
so
of
they're space
cheese.
Sandwiches. They're astronaut sandwiches more than old man sandwiches.
Oh, you could do
Buzz Aldrin. Buzz Aldrin advertised them. He's gonna be what, 88 next year?
Yeah, let's get him.
Yeah.
Old man Buzz sandwiches. Aldrin. I wish I'd had these on
yeah.
Apollo, whatever
yeah,
he was.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a terrible idea and it's not going to work. But Robin's book's available. where would
Lovely
you
with a sandwich.
Right, let's end with a question.
Right, go on.
What is your most treasured possession?
Do you know what? One thing that I really love is that I wrote to Boris Karloff's widow when I was a little boy because it was in the phone directory and she was the only Karloff, so I presumed it. So I've got a letter from Mrs. Boris Karloff saying, I'm glad that you like my husband's films. It was lovely
oh, that's
to
brilliant.
From you,
oh, that's
and
nice.
I hope you have a lovely time at school. It's like this lovely little two-sided letter that she sent with a postcard of Boris Karloff.
Whoa.
And it's just like a nice thing as well because... Yeah, it's one of those bits where I think, you know, there was a little 11-year-old boy going, isn't life difficult? Maybe it'll be easier if I write to Mrs. Boris Karloff and get
yeah.
a thing from her.
See, though, we had a lovely ending there, didn't we?
Yeah, it's nice.
It wasn't... It
no
wasn't,
death.
No death or eyes popping out
no
or being
wanking.
in a bucket of your own urine,
yeah.
right? And you've... Yeah. Well, I don't think we can top that. We should end it there, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
What about...
Gonna...
What? What about a lovely tune going all the way back to Elvis Presley and In the Ghetto?